This is Ruth Edelstein interviewing Harry M. Lasday and Linda Lasday for the National Council of Jewish Women Oral History Project 2. The date is December 16, 1983.
Mr. Lasday, would you tell us where you live, please?
That's on Darlington Road, 5825, Swell Hill.
Thank you. So what did we miss?
Mr. Lasday, when you had your store, Schmidt's Jewelry Store in Braddock, you were an eyewitness there to life in Braddock. And now the town is very much changed from what it was. Can you tell us first something about the life in the town, about the mill workers, how they lived, and what you observed?
Well, Braddock at one time was a very, very profitable town. And it held, there was a lot of rich people in Braddock at one time. However, things have changed, conditions have changed, and Braddock has changed with it. Braddock no longer is the town that it used to be. I remember specifically on a Saturday night, there were so many people on the streets that you couldn't walk on the sidewalk. You had to get off the sidewalk to make your way. And they used to have scheduled the trains coming in from Pitcairn, Wall, that's towns above Braddock. Braddock was a railroad town, and these towns too were railroad towns, and they all came in to do their shopping on a Saturday.
Also, you said that that you knew some of the bosses from Carnegie Steel Company and Edgar Thompson Woods. How did you know them? Did they come into Schmidt?
Oh, they came into the store. They came into Schmidt's jewelry store. And you can become very, very familiar with them and knew them very well. And they used to bring in some of their employees to do their buying, knowing that we were quite reliable.
What kind of people were they?
They're very fine people. Highest grade of college graduates, some of these bosses, mm-hmm. And very fine gentlemen.
Tell me also, how did the mill workers come to Braddock? Why did they end up in Braddock?
Well, it wasn't specifically Braddock that they came to. They came to the area. But the Braddock mill would send out people to other, they'd send them to Europe to bring in people to work in their mills. That's how badly that they needed the workmen in the mills.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to come in droves, maybe 10, 15, 20 at a time. Some would go to the Duquesne mill, some would go to the Homestead mill, some to Braddock. And these people were the backbone of the steelworks, mm-hmm. of the steel mills in the area.
So the companies like Edgar Thompson and Carnegie would send their own people to
their
Europe?
Their own people there to bring them into to enlist them in work in the United States. And there are quite a few came over because they wanted to come over.
Yeah.
Because conditions weren't altogether to their liking in the Europe countries.
Do you know how how the mill workers lived? Did they live well? Were they paid well?
Well, at the time they were paid well. They were paid. The unions had just started up and wages had become standard, and staple. And the mill saw that they had headquarters, living quarters, and they were very comfortable. And then in time they would send for their families and then their whole families would be open.
Mm-hmm. Do you know anything about the working conditions? I know there were strikes and there was, during the time you were there, I think an attempt to unionize the mill workers.
That was before my time. When I was there, everything was very lovely, mm-hmm. and The mill people were very happy with conditions. There wasn't too much of that when I was doing my term.
Tell me about the Jewish people in Braddock. Did they mingle only with each other? You mentioned that there were three synagogues.
Yes, there were three synagogues. There were enough families in the three boroughs, we call them the tri-boroughs, that's North Braddock, Braddock, and Rankin, to have three synagogues. There was one Orthodox and two conservatives. And up until possibly 20 years ago, they were pretty active, but all of a sudden the Jewish people moved out of town and the synagogue suffered. And as a result, there is no synagogue in Braddock.
Did they mingle with non-Jews, or were they...
Oh, yes, they did. The business people were very sociable. And they mingled. They had a border trade there, and they were very lovely.
You mentioned also before that you were a member of the Housing Authority in Braddock, and that when you were a member, you helped build a large low-income apartment building. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, this building was the first elevated building of its kind.
You mean, what do you mean elevated?
Well, it had an elevator.
It had an elevator.
It was, I think, around 10 or 12 stories high. And being on the housing committee there, I knew what was going on. But the construction was held back because of some of the people wanted to live right next door to other people, and that at first we didn't want the colored people to live next to. We wanted the colored people to have their own floor,
mm-hmm.
but they instead wanted to be next to the white people. So that held back the construction of the building maybe for 6 months until it was settled to the colored people's satisfaction. And I understand right now that same building may be torn down because of the conditions that the people have left it.
Mm-hmm. So the end result was that colored families could live wherever they wanted
to in the building.
And how did that work out over the years?
Well, over the years it was all right until there was too many of the colored people. And the white people moved out.
Mm-hmm. And then it became all colored?
About 90%.
Yeah. The Depression affected everybody in Braddock. How did it affect you?
Well, not too much. Not too much. Because it was a family proposition, myself, my brother-in-law. We were operating the stores, and we were conservative. And he was an optometrist, and I was a jeweler. And we got along fairly well.
Mm-hmm. Let's get now to the airport store. Can you tell us when you bought that, and also what the name of it was? You bought it in the 50s?
1952.
Mm-hmm.
That was the beginning. That was the beginning of the airport. That's when the airport was
May 30th, 1952.
May 30th, 1952. That was the first day of the opening of the airport, Greater Pittsburgh Airport. And I might add, it was one of the outstanding buildings of its kind in the country. The first 6 months that I was there, there was always people come in from out of town and from other cities to see the construction and how everything was run, and they got an awful lot of information from the building. And they in turn built the bigger cities that built their own airport. The way I got interested in the building, into the airport, I put a proposal to the county. And county was the operators of the building for a jewelry store. And that's the way they picked the concessions, for the concessionaires through bids. And I won the bid in the jewelry gift department. So that was my shop, that was my store. In fact, I didn't know I got it until a fixture man called me and wanted to come in and figure out my fixtures. And I knew nothing about it. And that's how I found out. And then, of course, it got into the papers.
What was the name of it?
We called it the same as we called the Braddock store, the L. Schmidt Jewelry Store. That was from my father-in-law. My wife's father was Lowell Schmidt. And he had started the Braddock store way back in 1888.
Was it a hub like Schmidt's Jewelry Store in Braddock? Did a lot of people come in?
Oh, more so, because we not only catered to the people in Braddock, it was their first stop. The airport was new at the time, and everybody wanted to see what it was all about, and they came to the airport. And the first stop was the Schmidt Jewelry Store at the airport. We carried type of merchandise that everybody would want, and we did quite well.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned also that you helped with some personal matters for the pilot and the airline employees. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I got to be very friendly with the operators of the airport, the operators of the airport, and the managers of the airlines. And being on a friendly basis, anything that they would want, they would come in to see me. And for instance, they would come in. I remember specifically, follow one man come in, one over, he would get a headstone. A grave. Another man came in and says, "Where can I get an attorney for a divorce?" And things like that. Carry out of my line, but they had respect in me, and they just knew that I would help them.
Linda was saying that you were called Mr. Airport at one time. Why did you get that title?
Well, everything was referred back to me. Anything that was little things that happened, you see Mr. Ladd, they see Mr. Ladd. So that became a common Mr. Airport.
Was there an association of store owners or concession owners there?
Yes, we had an association, a business association, called concessionaires, and I was president of that. And then we had little affairs, and we became very well fraternized together.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the airline managers themselves, when they first came to the airport, wouldn't fraternize with these other managers of the other airports, because they thought that was being on the same competitive basis. They thought that they shouldn't be associated with them. But this little organization of ours got them so friendly that, in fact, that soon they had their own organization. They had golf clubs and things like that through the managers, which didn't exist, and it didn't exist in any other airport either.
Didn't you have another shop besides the jewelry shop?
Well, they put a new wing, a north wing, into the airport. And it was a wing for the United Airlines. And there was a corner spot there that they left for telephone booths. So I, being up the airport constantly, I thought that would be a good place for a newsstand. Being in the new wing, possibly that there's nothing like that in that area. So I told the airport, Mr. Sweeney, the director. The director of the airport. I told him what I wanted, and he says, "Well, let's consider it." And no sooner I went up to the director's office, everybody else wanted it, and there was so many people that the drugstore, so many people that wanted this newsstand after being my idea, and that is really the reason why I got it, because the director says, because Mr. Lasday suggested it, we didn't think of it, we're going to give it to him. Mm-hmm. So I was there for 11, 12 years until I moved out of there, until I got out of the airport.
Hmm. And what was where was the location of the jewelry store?
The jewelry store was right in the center of the building, directly across from Horns and the drugstore and the coffee shop, right in the middle of things.
Can you tell us some more stories about the airport and things that happened there?
Yeah, you mentioned just now that you had a story that you wanted to tell us.
Yes, it's not very pleasant. There was a gentleman there, an elderly gentleman. I've got to become very, well, I got to know him pretty well because of his contacts. He came up to our airport quite frequently, and he was always looking for fresh cigars. I remember that. And that made a hit to him because I always had fresh cigars. So he come up one day and he says, "You know, I'm a gentleman about 70. He said, I come up to pick up my grandchildren. They're coming from Cincinnati. I come to pick them up." And he says, "I got a half an hour yet to wait." And he says, "Well, you entirely just wait here." Well, he was mulling around the books and the little things that we had in the show until the plane came in. He went down. He met, there was two boys, two grandchildren of his that he met, and he brought them up to my store, the newsstand. He says, "Look, I'm going to let the boys stay here, and I'm going down. I'm going to pick up the car, which was in the parking lot, and I'll meet him right out in front of the building." I said, "It's perfectly safe here." And the boys mingled around the books and the cartoon books and things like that, and they had a great time. But pretty soon a half hour went by and an hour went by, and the old gentleman didn't come back. And the boys started to get leery about it, and I started to get worried about it. And so one of the policemen, it was about 2 hours later, one of the policemen came around, and I said, "Look, these boys are waiting for their grandfather to come." He said he was here about a couple hours ago, and he said he was going to pick them up, and he hasn't come around yet. And he said, "Well, I hate to tell you this. I don't know if it's the same gentleman, but we picked this gentleman up right beside his car. He had a heart attack. And we sent him to the hospital. And they knew his name, and they had contacted his family in Pittsburgh. And he says, "You just keep the boys here until the family comes." And that gentleman died that afternoon, I figure, on that day. So that's what I say. It's not a very pleasant story, but it might be of interest.
Yeah. But it shows, too, that people came to you help other than a fine jewelry. You also said something about you were given something from the mayor of Pittsburgh to take to the mayor of Paris when you were going there.
Yeah, we had a Lions Club in Braddock, or in the airport, and there was a convention in Nice, France, a Lions convention in Nice, France, and I was appointed one of three to get a delegation to go to Nice, France, to arrange for it. And we had about 70 or 80 people. One of the biggest airplanes, one of the biggest jets to take us over there. And while we're in Paris, we had an audience with the mayor, and he gave us each a pen picture done by pen and ink. And he told us that at the time that Pittsburgh was very much like Paris, because they were going through a smoke abatement period, and we were too at that time. We had use here in Pittsburgh certain type of coal, certain type of fuel, and our furnaces wasn't allowed to smoke. And he says that's what we're doing here in Paris. And he says it's very much like Pittsburgh. It's very interesting.
What did you bring to him from the mayor?
The mayor of Pittsburgh had given us a key to present to him, key of Pittsburgh to present to him. And he in turn gave us an enormous picture that he had painted to give back to the mayor.
Yeah. Linda, do you have anything to add here? Is there something else, Mr. Lasday, you want to add about the differences the changes that have taken place in Squirrel Hill since you lived here over the years?
Well, Squirrel Hill becomes just about the same, only it's a little more Jewish.
more so than when
more
you first
so,
moved here?
I think so. Although people are moving out to the outskirts, there's still a very large Jewish population. Our synagogues are pretty well filled up during the holidays, so they still have a large Jewish population in Squirrel Hill. They have more stores, Jewish-type stores now, more food stores than we had years ago.
Mm-hmm. I think that's all I have to ask.
There was one story. I don't know whether I had mentioned it to you at the airport, where there was a lady and a man that was taken off the airport, off one of the airplanes. Pittsburgh police were alerted. The airport police were alerted that these two had robbed a building, a jewelry store.
Is that the same story you told us
well,
before?
Well, it's told than you got.
Yeah, we have it. Thank you very much, Mr. Lasday.
And that's all for today.